Welcome to That Season Air podcast. I'm your host, Gina. Stick with me as I chat to season airs, expats and adventurers across the world, sharing their inspiring stories and interesting insights into living and working abroad. And I said... Today on the show, we talk to Maria Kuzma. Maria comes in to tell us all about how her first ski season led her to a career in pro freeriding and environmental architecture. In this episode, we discuss so many different subjects, including Maria's terrifying avalanche experiences, her relentless work saving the planet one building at a time, and her exciting new project, the all-female snowboard movie, Surreal. Listen right to the end to find out how meditation and Wim Hof techniques have helped push Maria out of her comfort zone with incredible results for her body, mind, and overall success, as well as her advice for those looking to take the next step in their journey. So without further ado, here's the show. So a very warm welcome to the lovely Maria Kuzma.
Thank you, Gina. I am so grateful and honoured to be here. You have no idea.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. You're from New Zealand, is that right?
Yes, I tend to say that I'm from New Zealand because all my family live there now. My family have their New Zealand passports. But really, I was actually born in Australia while my family were living in Papua New Guinea.
Wow.
Yeah, so my mom knew she was having twins. I'm a twin.
Yeah.
And she flew to Australia on her own just to give birth.
Oh, wow.
And then flew back to to Papua New Guinea. And then from there, it's kind of like a rocky kind of global
right.
story. And then we all kind of, the whole family ended up in New Zealand.
So what nationality are you?
Legally, I basically say either New Zealand or the UK because I travel on my UK passport because my dad's Scottish. So legally, UK is what I go for, but New Zealand is
at heart.
Also.
You feel more like a New Zealander than a Scottish person.
Yeah. And when I was competing, which, you know, I was still last year, I'm competing on the New Zealand national team. There's a lot of ties in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Did my master's there too.
So yeah, we'll get into your education actually. You've got a master's in architecture, is that right?
Yes, I do.
And you, as you just said, you got it in New Zealand?
Yes, I did.
Was that always the plan?
No, absolutely not. That's a very good question, Gina.
So what was the plan?
Well, there was no plan. There was a plan. There was a plan to keep my parents happy when I was 17 or 18, finishing high school. So we're like, okay, what do you do? You go to uni, right?
As you do, yeah.
Yep. So go to uni. But then the whole time me and my sister were both at uni studying Bachelor of International Business or something.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. We just wanted to go snowboarding. So after a year, to our parents, sorry, guys, we're going to go to New Zealand for 6 months and we're going to stop uni. And they said no.
What? Sorry, where were you at this point in time?
At that point of time. We were in Australia.
Okay.
We had just finished our high school years, but we moved to Australia at the end of our high school years. Before that, we had been in Borneo, living in Borneo.
What?
Yeah.
What were you doing in Borneo?
My father worked at a coal mine and there was an international school there. So we literally lived in the jungle, like orangutans breaking into our houses kind of style.
What?
Yeah. It was crazy.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. So you went from Borneo to Australia.
Yes.
And then you told your parents, right, we're going to New Zealand, you and your twin sister.
Yes. We're going for 6 months for the winter.
Right. To snowboard.
To snowboard.
That's the plan.
We'll be back.
Right.
And then we never went back.
Oh, no. I'm sure they were thrilled.
Yeah. We didn't see them for 2 years. And
oh,
then they were like,
goodness.
Where are you? So they came and... they were like, where are you? We're going to come. So they came and then they ended up buying the house across the street from us because they loved it so much there.
Yeah.
I was a season air. So I worked for, there's a ski cross country place that was right next to Snow Park, which was, snow park days in New Zealand were incredible.
Right.
Yeah.
Where in New Zealand is this?
This is in South Island.
Right. Okay.
In Wanaka, Queenstown area. So I was a cross country ski instructor. By being a cross-country ski instructor, you could get the pass that got you the season's pass for the snow park.
Right.
Which was a place just with a park. And it was like the heyday of snowboarding. It was so much fun.
Really? Oh,
yeah,
cool.
Snow park,
so you just did the job to get the pass, essentially.
Yes. And it was an easy job. You get paid pretty well to take kids around the snow park. And it kept you pretty fit too.
Ah, okay.
So cross-country skiing is really good for you.
Oh, do you know what? I saw a cross-country skier. I think it was yesterday. I was on a walk and I was like, I really want to have a go at that.
Yeah.
But it looks hard.
No.
No?
No. The skis are
just looks like really, hard work, not like
Oh, yeah. It's a good
gnarly.
Workout. It's a good workout. But you can go hard or you can take it easy.
Yeah.
Cool. But from there, I then worked in rentals, mm-hmm. you know, ski rentals, did that for a few years. But then one summer, I injured myself. I remember doing a bank, well, no, it wasn't a bank slalom. It was, I was competing in something and I injured my hip. So I would go New Zealand winters and then Fernie, BC, British Columbia winters.
Oh.
So that was like the kind of path, you know,
yeah.
Canada, New Zealand. And I got injured. So I stayed and went to Japan instead of going to Canada.
Oh my goodness.
Because Japan is, you know, it was a shorter yeah. time and there's a lot more snow there. So yeah. you're not going to hurt yourself too much. And
good thinking.
Yep. And with my international business diploma, because I only got 1 year in, so it ended up just being a diploma.
Okay.
I actually found an like entrepreneur kind of guy that was retired, was a retired barrister. And he was running this company out of this town close to Wanaka. And he needed a personal assistant.
Right.
So I worked for him. He loved that I had an international business diploma. And I basically ran his business for him, right? She's just laughing.
He was basically like, Maria,
we can take on the world. And I was like, yes, we can. And he was like, you can do whatever you want. What do you want to do? And I was like, I want to be an architect. And he was like, let's do it. And he literally, while I was working with him, he helped me build a portfolio to send into universities. And because of his support with that, I got into a university. Cool. And from there, that's when I started the architecture.
What made you want to do architecture?
It was something that I'd wanted to do my whole life.
Okay,
but so something that was unreachable. It was never something that I ever dreamed that I could do.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
That's but so then interesting.
This old man who I thought was really smart because, yeah. you know, told me I could. So I was like, well, if he says I can, then I guess I can.
Give it a go.
I mean, I might as well try.
Yeah.
He was selling these big marine vessels, like big barges and, I don't know, trawling vessels, like super random for Wanaka. And he was dealing with all the paperwork, the lawyer work with it. It was super bizarre. Yeah. And then he would sell them and then he would manage the towing, the people who would tow the boats to where they wanted to go, like across the ocean. They would tow these big boats. And then he would make a little bit of money on the side by buying and selling big portions of fuel for these for these things. It was like, it was super interesting. He was a real character too.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. So you went and did your master's in architecture?
Yes.
Did you always plan for it to go into the environmental side of things, the eco side of things, or was that something that came later on?
That's a good question.
Mm.
That decision came about a roundabout way. I was very lucky because the summer break for New Zealand coincided with the European winter. So I had 3 months between, like, time free where I could go to Europe. And then I would always get a bit of extra time because the New Zealand Snow Sports Academy would have had a good relationship with my uni because I always had them communicating with each other. So they would always help me get more time to do assignments. It was super, super helpful. But then you kind of, I think maybe that connection with nature or something, because I worked in all these crazy places. And from there I learned, wait a minute, that's so wrong. Like, how many resources are coming out of the earth to build this crazy building?
Yeah.
And they're boasting about how beautiful the glass is. And this massive skyscraper is like just coated in this beautiful glass. I'm like, how much energy did it make to make that like beautiful structural glass that's completely transparent and straight and not wobbly and, you know?
Interesting.
And all the steel, like the steel. Mm. So from there you're like, oh, what do I do? Like there's that conscious, you know, like if we're going to move forward and create this like beautiful new earth that's a really good hybrid between human activity and the nature, then
By this point, you had lived in quite a lot of different countries and kind of picked up a lot of different things, I should think. And and it's sort of a natural progression, isn't it? When you see nature and all these wonderful countries, you kind of get a bit connected to it. And
For sure. There's like almost like a responsibility that you take on, you know.
I'm going to get back onto that in a bit. I'm going to get back onto your projects in architecture. What I was wondering, or what our listeners might be wondering about, is how you ended up in Austria.
That's a good question. Our first ever ski trip as a family was going to Austria. My father always wanted us to go to the mountains because he did it for when he was in the army and he loved it. And he was like, okay, these kids need to be out in the mountains in the snow. And then, so that was our first ever ski family trip was to Austria. And then in around you know, mid 2005, 2006, say, there was a big snowboard New Zealand crew that would come to Meyerhofen in Innsbruck because the Penken Park was
world-renowned.
Yes,
yes. Reputation.
And for me, I was like, okay, some friends of mine come here and it's quite central. I want to come here to do the Freeride World Tour qualifier circuit.
Mm-hmm.
But Austria seems pretty central. It seems pretty affordable. So Let's just go there and figure it out. And then I fell in love, like, just as you know, Meyerhofen's pretty dope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell us what your COVID experience has been like here in Meyerhofen. Because what was the original plan? Were you supposed to be here during that time?
No, that's a good question. COVID really threw a spanner in the works.
Mm-hmm.
In a good way, in a bad way. I mean, we wouldn't be sitting here right now if it wasn't for COVID.
100%. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. So I was supposed to play out the winter and then maybe do some filming, maybe do some competitions. And then I had a school build to do in Brazil. COVID hit. Brazil was really bad.
Oh, no.
And I couldn't get back home.
Mm-hmm.
Usually I would just go to Bali, but Bali was closed. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to stay here.
Yeah.
And it was the best thing ever to happen because I've been traveling so much for my projects, just trying so hard to get them off the ground, you know?
Yeah, you're very busy.
Yeah, but what I actually learned was, like, there's so much more done if you just stay in one place.
Yeah?
Yeah, but that is only because I had the investment of time and energy the years before meeting the people and traveling.
Right, okay.
So I feel like the universe just kind of... had me, yeah.
That's it now. Yeah. You need to stay here for a bit. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. And what ended up happening was the COVID time ended up being very busy. I think maybe that was a coping mechanism to go into hyperdrive.
Yes.
But I ended up doing so many hours on Zoom meetings, on projects, creating renders, building with my team, helping build News Cycle.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, it was crazy.
Yeah.
It was like hyperdrive.
I wanted to talk a little bit about freeriding because cool. I know very little about freeriding. We had a brief conversation before we started recording where I admitted to you that I am a snowboarder, but I am one that just goes up and down the piece, which is quite funny. Considering I've been here for several years, I should be a bit more daring, but I'm a massive wimp. So I don't really know a lot about freeriding. Can you explain to me and our listeners what exactly freeriding is?
Yes, I mean, I can talk about freeriding in general. I'll go off into the branches, but free riding in general is basically when you're going into the backcountry and you're not on the piste, you're riding fresh power, ideally, and you're trying to read the terrain and have fun with the terrain and do whatever you want. And then in regards to competitions, you've got basically a free ride competition is when you have a face and you choose a line down the face and you choose to either go to that wind lip or go over those cliffs and you just...
picking the best line, I guess.
Yes, picking the best line. But then you've got something like the natural selection, which is like the best evolution of free riding ever. And it's where Travis Rice has gone and built kind of obstacles in the summer and then they get snowed on. And then so it's basically like a free ride competition, but better because you've got jumps already built in there.
Oh, wow.
But in the powder.
So it sounds like a lot of fun.
It's so much fun. It's so much fun. And it's like, it pushes you, you know, there's been the best best snowboarders in the world, females that have gotten wild cards, for example, in the Freeride World Tour. And it's challenging for them because it's a completely different kind of niche part of snowboarding.
Wow.
Yeah. It's fun.
Sounds pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's not as
Sounds pretty scary.
No, well, I just watched the X Games right now, all the women in the big air and the slopestyle, and it just blew my mind how exponentially the level is growing. And it makes me so proud, you know?
Good. Yeah, exactly.
But not in, like, I feel like that setup doesn't allow it in free riding unless
really?
Unless you look at something like natural selection.
So you've competed in the Free Ride World Tour.
Like, my dream was to go, when I was in New Zealand, was to go compete on free ride competitions because that was the only way I knew how to, like, go and make, you know, do competitions for snowboarding. And I was like, you know what, I learned how to snowboard in Fernie, BC, riding big mountains, so that's what I'm going to try and do. And I remember seeing videos of it, of like these women, these female snowboard shredders competing on the freeride. And I was like, oh my God, that's my dream. I want to go do that. And then I went and I
gave it a bash.
Yeah, I met all these amazing, incredible women.
Yeah.
And they're the ones that introduced me to Thule. Like Aline Bock was a Freeride World Champion.
Okay.
Freeride World Tour Champion, Aline Bock. And she's a Thule rider. And I was always with, you know, I would always come and say hi to her during ISPO and stuff. And then I met the Thule people during ISPO. No, never had any expectations. I remember the team manager at the time, who was now, you know, in charge of brands, Thule mm-hmm. brand. I would always ask, because I always heard so many good things about her through Aline. So that was, I would always go and like, because you don't get many women that are onto it that you can, like business women that you can go and ask for advice. So I would go there and be like, hi, Tina, how's you? Yeah, you're so busy. Oh my God, you're amazing. Yeah. Oh my God. And then I'd be like, hey, so, you know, I'm working in New York as an architect and I don't know what to do and blah, blah. And she'd be like, she would just give me advice, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Cool.
And from there, after that, I was so grateful to even be able to talk to her. And then from there, she was like, hey, do you want to be on the Thule crew? I think we could make some cool things happen.
Oh, cool.
And I was like, what? I will work my ass off to be yes. on the Thule crew. And because of that, she was right. Some amazing things have happened. And I know it's just the catalyst for incredible change. Yeah.
The one thing I do want to ask you actually about in the Freeride World Tour is that avalanche. That was in 2011, is that right?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe even earlier. I don't know. It just feels like such a long time ago. You know, I think we need to talk about it more.
Mm-hmm.
But that stuff shouldn't be happening on a big competition like that, because it was on the Beg de Ross and it was the grand finale of the Freeride World Tour.
Mm-hmm.
And my ego says, like, oh, because I was having such a bad run and it happened and that it got a lot of exposure. And I was like, oh, man, I wish I was having a good run at least.
Yeah.
Oh, no. But I wasn't. I was, like, young and I don't know. And anyway, it had snowed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the organizers of the competition were like, we're going to bomb the men's side, but we're going to leave the women's side. That will heli the women up so that they don't have to hike up. So it was, right. like, this weird thing. And we had expressed our concern saying, actually, no, I think if anything, it will move more than the men's side because of the way it had been affected by the wind.
Right.
Anyway, I thought I was fine though, because I was literally dropping in last on the face.
Okay, yeah.
And it went anyway.
Oh my goodness.
So, you know, and it was the worst. It is not a good feeling. And like we were filming like the other day when it was level 4. So we were super safe.
Yeah.
Me, I'm always safe. Always, 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 always.
Gotta be.
Yeah, and even then, it was like you hear that sound. Like I heard it 4 times. Rarely hear it once, mm-hmm. but I heard it 4 times in a day where you're standing on a mountain or the snow, and the whole base falls.
Yeah,
it goes poof, oh and it's God. Not a good. It's not a good sound. I literally fell over this cliff, and I was like, oh, kind of annoyed because like I felt like I kept tumbling, but it was like the whole thing moving around me. And I remember seeing it and it looked like I was in like a cement mixer or something. And then all I saw was a bowl below me. So I was like, oh man, I'm going to get sucked into there. God. But it was fine in the end. But also it took me ages to like, because I don't know if you know this, but with avalanches, the snow heats up with the movement. So
right,
it heats up as it moves down the mountain. And then as soon as it stops, it like turns into concrete. I had to literally take like with helicopters and cameras.
Everything
all around me. Yeah, I had to just
focused
like
on you.
And yeah, and I was just like
sliding
out my
down.
Snowboard.
Oh my
it
goodness!
Was horrible.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I watched horrible. It. Yeah, I came across this video and I was like, "What on earth?" Like, you just sat on top of the snow, just sliding down.
Yeah.
It looked really scary. So, hats off to you for getting through that. That
if
was
it's going to happen
intense.
Any other time, it's good to happen with helicopters and guides all around.
Yeah,
you,
exactly.
Sure. But I mean. That's not the only experience I've had with that, you know.
You've had other ones?
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to tell us about
that? Yeah, I mean, this is because it goes back to raising awareness because we were shooting in Verbier,
mm-hmm.
another same place.
Yeah, same place.
But different area, completely different area. Okay. And like this was only maybe 4 or 5 years ago rather than 12 years ago.
Right.
It had been snowing a lot, like an amazing photographer, Taro, and he was on his skis. He's a snowboarder, but when he shoots, he's on his skis. And we were literally just traversing across a mountain face, and there was some old avalanche debris there. We thought it was old because it was so hard, right? We had to literally take our boards off to climb over it and go across it.
Oh, really? Wow.
And then as we were in the middle of it, some Frenchies were yelling at us on the other side saying, there's someone in there. And we were like, oh no, there's someone in there. So I took out my transceiver and put it on. But then the skier, Taro, had his pole and just for some reason was skiing across the debris. Saw a black something black and like hit it with his pole and it was plastic.
Right.
So I know you guys can't see me, but if this was the face here, mm-hmm. the skier was lying like upside down, facing down and with his legs like here.
Right.
And just the back, tiny back of his helmet was showing. But he'd already been under for ages.
Oh my goodness.
And
so like, he was kind of face down in the snow. Is that right? So
yeah, he was face down, but it took us a while to like dig him out. So he's like
arched into the snow and you could just see the back of his helmet.
Yeah. Like he was like this, mm-hmm. man. Like, I don't know what fate had in store for him because he didn't have any of his gear on. And he was...
So he didn't have any Avi gear on.
He didn't have anything. Mm. So we had all of our gear out. We were looking... It took us a while. When we got to him, he had obviously... His body was like, you know, what happens when you prepare... Your body's preparing to die or go into survival mode. It releases everything.
Right.
And, you know, you're digging someone out and their face is blue and, oh my you know, word. It's just like... he was just so lucky.
Yeah.
He was so lucky. I was with Roland and Roland stuck his hand. I remember like I thought that I would always be so calm and collected. Yeah. And I just remembered holding his head because it was in an awkward position. I had to hold his head while the others were digging him out.
Oh my goodness.
And Roland jammed his hand down his throat to get the snow out of his esophagus yeah. or whatever. And I remember when he did that, his chest like was like a machine. Like it just started pumping
oh
like
my goodness,
to get air into me. It. And I just remember I was frozen. I was like,
scary.
Whoa, his face is blue, man. And look at his chest. Like he hasn't breathed yeah. for ages. And yeah, I was yeah. just like, intense. Everyone else was like, you know,
yeah.
Because he then started saying this guy's name. And we're like, oh my God, there's someone else in here. But yeah, but there wasn't. And then there was a heli evac. Oh, but,
wow.
But so it just, goes just to happened show.
Just before you got there then.
And yeah, like literally like 10 minutes. 12 minutes.
Thank God you guys turned up. Sounds like he was a very lucky man.
Very lucky.
One word of advice that you would give to our listeners about preparing for
yeah.
going off piste and backcountry, what is it?
Well, yeah, great. If you're a newbie, surround yourself with people who know. First point.
Yes.
Surround yourself with people who know what the layers are doing, mm-hmm. what the snowfalls have been doing all winter. Secondly, learn your technology, you know, your yeah. transceivers, learn how to use them, yeah. know how to use them.
You can actually go on courses for yep. this, right?
Yep. And thirdly, just look at the reports.
Yeah.
Just like you look at a weather forecast, just look at the snow, the avalanche report, and then base everything based on that.
Yeah. Everything is online now. You can yeah. just go and check it out before you go anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your recent project that you're now working on, tell us about that. I'm talking about your recent snowboard project.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, it's really exciting because, you know, as we were saying before, there are some positive things that have come out of COVID. And one of them, a lot of them are, you know, what kind of opportunities it has brought up. One opportunity was time to work focus on mm-hmm. projects. And then another opportunity was that Tini Gruber told me about. Yes, lovely Christina Gruber. She told me about a group of women that I already knew, some of them,
mm-hmm.
some shredders, female snowboarders from Europe that were wanting to embark on a film project. And, you know, the only women, all female snowboard film project that I really knew of from before was the Lipstick Productions that a lot of my other friends in Innsbruck, female badass okay. shredders, have worked on. And that was like 8 years ago. So I was super, super hyped
mm-hmm.
because first of all, I believe that the European female snowboarders who follow competition circuits like X Games and,
yeah,
you know, Olympics, they're all doing so well. But like in America as well, mm-hmm. all the female snowboarders are doing really, really well and pushing the industry.
That's so cool.
You know, but difference is in America, there are 4 or 5 female snowboarding crews that are coming out with really cool content, but there's none of that really happening in Europe.
Right. So
I'm like, what's going on? Like, of course I want
to
do this.
In the market. Yes, we need to fill it.
Exactly. Europe. You know, it doesn't reflect what's coming out of Europe regarding female snowboarders film projects. It doesn't really reflect what's happening in the industry because there's a lot of female shredders just shredding around. And when I started meeting these women that I would be filming with, I was like, whoa, you're really good.
Yeah.
Why don't I know about you?
Exactly. Yeah.
And they just don't do competitions.
What?
They don't, they just ride rails and they're really good at it. And yeah, and we, you know, we came together at a very interesting time when it's quite difficult right now mm-hmm. to ask for money for sponsors.
Yeah.
But I feel like that environment really made us work hard for it and figure out a way to convince them to give yeah. us money. So yeah, I feel like we're doing a really good job and we're in the midst of it and we've got some funding, got some sponsors. And one of the ways we convinced some sponsors to come on board was that we would be providing them with constant kind of footage throughout the winter in the shape of behind the scenes edits.
Yeah.
So that one will come out in a couple of weeks. So nothing cool. fancy, you know, just little edits, you yeah. know, and then the final production will be a kind of beautiful, you know, we're not X Games writers, so we're mm-hmm. focusing on having it shot beautifully. And
yeah, tell us about that, the whole production or the concept.
It's like we have this crazy reality that everyone deals with, but we can create our own realities with snowboarding. Yes, so this is our reality that yeah. we experience through snowboarding.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I get to ride with some really cool women, like women that I've always, you know, Mary Lugan, I've always wanted to have an excuse really? To ride with her.
Cool.
And Teenie as well, because she's just the boss.
Yeah, the raddest.
We did a backcountry kicker the other day and she just landed a cab 5 massive just straight off the bat. I was like, what? I'm so honored to ride with you.
So cool. Teeny.
Yeah.
When do you reckon that's going to be out?
Well, we're saying that the feature of the short film will be out fourth quarter of 2021. We'll see.
Yeah, it's probably COVID depending. A bit difficult at the yeah. moment with the current situation to yeah. actually get together or film, yeah. go to different countries, see each other, those sorts of things.
Yeah, so. I mean, the idea is that we all do it. We film it locally.
Okay, cool.
So I believe that it will be done. So watch the space. And we've got websites, surrealsnowboarding.com.
Cool.
You can follow us or on Instagram.
So tell us about Recycle Build.
Recycle Build. So I was asked to be on the Thule crew. At the time, I had been working in like between winter seasons in Europe in New York City.
Right.
On these like amazing, the Hudson Yards project, like an incredible team working on an incredible big skyscraper. After that, I was like, Tina, I don't know what to do. And she was like, just don't do anything and just go to Indonesia. And I was like, really? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, okay. Usually I would not do that. I'd go through the safety route, yeah. you know? But it was Tina. She told me to do it. So I was
what
like, okay.
What was the safety route?
The safety route was to go back to New York City. My boss was like, Maria, come back, please. You can leave to go to the winter. It was mm-hmm. Just seemed like too good to be true. In the end, I was like, no, I'm going to Indonesia. Silly. I told my parents and they went. My mum was like, no, what?
Yeah.
You're not going to be the fancy New York architect that I want you to be? And I was like, no, soz. Yeah. So yeah. I went to Indonesia and there was a Thule crew gathering. There's not usually a Thule crew gathering where they have all the Thule crew members from all parts of the Thule crew come together in Sweden and meet each other, collaborate, whatever. So I go to Sweden after being in Indonesia for a few months, you know, just I had no money. I was like, oh my God, I should be in New York making money, you know.
Back to the season life.
Yeah. Oh man, it was tough. Exactly. And there was so many inspiring people at this Thule crew event. And one of those inspiring people is a man named Pedro Oliva. And mm-hmm. he got the world record for the highest waterfall jump on a kayak.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of crazy. Up until then, his whole career had been researching the quality of rivers through urban environments.
Okay.
And the positive impact of waterfalls mm-hmm. on the environment and, you know, people's relationship with water and how kind of disoriented we have become, you know,
yeah.
which is correct. And you know, after hanging out with everyone, he was like, Maria, I think we should do a project in Brazil. And I was like, really?
Yeah.
And it was just always such a dream, like Brazil is a different universe, yeah. you know. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. So I went to Brazil and we didn't have anything in mind. We just went and met and people looked at sites. I went on this like expedition with one of our sponsors, a vegan superfood brand called Bio Dois.
Mm-hmm.
And from there it evolved and now it has become like this beautiful blossoming project.
I saw on your Instagram actually a lot of photos and information about that expedition.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Amazing. We were taken. So I was vegetarian at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Side note. And I was like, okay, there's a vegan superfood brand that want me to, like, I'm there. And they're like, you can join. It was a month expedition through the freaking Brazilian, you know, countryside and jungle and yeah. Amazonian rainforest, going through, seeing, like, going to waterfalls, yeah. going to visiting people because it was for content for them.
Yeah.
So visiting like people that were maybe trying different farming techniques,
mm-hmm.
but it was all on the road. We had like a biologist, we had a famous vegan nutritionist. There was Pedro. There was all these different people there.
A lot of cool people.
Yeah, and that was kind of the inspiration for what we wanted to do. And in the end now, Recycle Build is kind of, you know, Recycle Build Brazil. We're building a school in Brazil. Amazing. But Recycle Build is basically like prototyping waste-derived building materials, like the application of waste-derived building materials into buildings.
Yeah.
But also using the building to... You know, I sent you the animation.
Yeah, it looks awesome. One of the things that I found interesting was that you won an award. This was for the Brazil project, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's cool because it was a big step for me to kind of walk away from New York.
Yeah.
But I already had a lot of roots. Like, there was something special in New York.
Okay.
But what I was working on at the time, I walked away from. So I was like, okay. So, and then I met Pedro and he's like, come on, let's do a project that can be the catalyst for a lot of good change. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, let's do it. So it was my first own project, you know?
Wow.
And we put a lot of heart and soul and a lot of hours into, you know, because it wasn't just like, oh, I have a client and the company's going to give me money to design a building. It wasn't like that. It was like, what's the problem? Who can we get to, what's our solution and who can we get excited enough or who can we convince to support us to get this done?
So it's pretty much from scratch that you just went, we want to do this.
Yeah.
This is the idea and we're going to design something, get people on board.
Yes.
And see if we can get some money to build it.
Yes. And first it was like a community building with water sports stuff so people can integrate themselves in the river.
Right.
And then we ended up, you know, there were many meetings with council and what they ended up saying was, hey, you know, we've got a really good school here. It's a good school and they need more buildings and it's right on the river and it's on a really important peninsula of a river where two rivers meet that feed Sao Paulo and Rio their drinking water. So the site was very special, which we are given to build on, which is incredible. And it's in a situation where like the school needs buildings. They're like, okay, we need these buildings. We need buildings. We need more buildings. There's too many kids in each class. And the council, the people in the council they just had so much love and soul and energy into getting something really cool done.
It is a very honorable project to get involved with. So congratulations on that. And you won the award. What was the award?
I didn't even talk about the award. I went on a side rant.
What was the award?
Yeah. So I'm hustling. I don't live on a lot of money and we want big things to happen. Like right now we have some projects that we're trying to get off the ground in the US and we're talking to investors all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always trawling the internet for grants, for anything that I can apply for, even if I probably don't have a chance. I'm going to get an application through to them because even the process of me gathering an application means that the next time I find something to apply for, I already have it.
You know,
all the material done. And I find this World Architecture Festival and they had a grant for the Water Research Prize. And so I applied for that. Absolutely no expectations. And for some weird reason the universe aligned and they gave us the award, which just so good because we had these because we wanted to put IoT devices in, we wanted to put all these like low tech, high tech stuff in, and we're like, where's this money coming from? It doesn't matter, we're just gonna keep trying. And now it's, you know, it's just, it was like
such an achievement. I actually, when I was looking at the stuff you sent over to me, totally impressed by the, when the kids are washing their hands, it comes up on the mirror to say their usage of water and energy that day.
Yes, so IoT devices.
Yeah.
So Internet of Things.
That's so cool. And they learn to live more sustainably and really
cool
stuff.
The idea is like subtle brainwashing. You know, you've got a building where there's kids there every day. And, you know, I feel like if we get into the minds of the children, then maybe the future will be a lot brighter.
Yeah.
So if every time a child goes to the toilet and washes their hand, which they're going to do at least once or twice a day.
Yeah.
The idea is that they wash their hands. It activates the smart mirror. It just shows like what the levels of the water are doing and how are the solar panel batteries doing? How much energy is the building using right now? When's the next rainfall coming so that they know when the water's going to top up, you know, just like stuff like that. And also every toilet flush goes directly into a system which is closed loop. So they know that all these plants and vegetation that's giving them shade and greenery
amazing
is because of their waste. Yeah.
It's so cool.
I feel like these subtle additions are like, yeah, you know.
Get the young people thinking about these things. That's smart. I was very impressed with Recycle Build. And you got another project?
So we do have projects starting in Portugal. We also have two projects that we're working towards in the US.
Mm-hmm.
And after the recent US elections, momentum for those have just been building and building, building and building. And
that's awesome.
I don't know if you know about Clubhouse yet, but
I do. Yes.
Yeah. We talk to a lot of investors on Clubhouse. It's the best place for anyone who wants advice. You know, you can be in a room with the CEO of an ESG investing group and there could be like six people. And well, when I started on Clubhouse, there were six. Now there's hundreds of people, but you can literally be in a room with an investor and you can ask them questions. And
that's so cool.
Yeah.
So we've done Recycle Build. Is there anything else you want to say on that?
I mean, the most important thing about that was that Thule gave us a platform to do that. You know, we came up with this idea, Pedro and I, and we approached Thule with it, and they were basically like, we believe in you. You know, you go do it. We'll support you to try and figure it out.
Yeah.
Now we've figured it out. And then because of that, I was like, hey, there's something else that we want to do in the US. And Thule said, okay, we will support you to try and figure it out.
Yes.
Which is so, it's so special.
Yeah.
From a snowboard company, you know, from a snowboard sponsor. It's so special to have that support to like try and make a change and like, you know, something
They've realized it's important.
Yeah.
And they want to get on board and that's fantastic news. So.
Yes. Especially if it involves kids because they are the future.
Well, that's it. And with the Recycle Build project, it's going to have an effect on the community as well. It's not just the kids, right? There's plans in place for housing, is it?
Yeah, we're using the project to be a built example of how our new cycled materials and also the way that it's designed can be implemented into a low-income housing scheme, because what's available right now isn't necessarily the best way to do it in regards to costing and quality of living. So our aim is to show them that we can have a kind of circular economy element to it and make it better at like a third of the price.
That's awesome.
Which is like, that's how you sell it, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and quality of living. Do you want to tell us a bit about New Cycle? Because this is also one of your projects that's going to be launching soon, isn't it?
Yes. It's. I'm very lucky and grateful to be on this team of people that I met. I met this now really good friend of mine, Sabrina Vitasari, and she's kind of like came from this tech background, tech startup background. She did a stint in New York City as well. And during COVID, we were always talking about waste to value systems, waste to value technologies, tapping into waste streams like from large companies like agricultural industry and stuff, and using that as a way to solve problems, basically circular economy. So at the start of quarantine, we applied for a grant from the Finnish government and they were like, yes, build it. And we're like, oh,
now we have to do it.
Oh, I thought my summer was going to be busy and now it's going to be even more busy.
Yeah.
And it's great. Like, you know, we got the tempo done
and
our consumer facing side of the company will be launched on Valentine's Day 2021.
Okay.
And basically what we're doing is building waste to value technologies and networks and how it's applied. Like, you know, we've already kind of applied it to the snow industry.
Okay. How?
Thule, I'm like, can I say this? But like Thule are trying to get on board.
Right.
And then also, I could probably say this, I think they'll love it, Asmo Snowboards. They've already started pressing their snowboards with our plant-based waste-derived resins.
Wow, cool.
Basically, we're tapping into the agricultural industries by tapping into some of their waste streams and making some cool stuff out of it.
That's wicked.
And it can be, you know, applied to many different things. And this, I can talk about it a lot.
Yeah,
you know,
so cool.
But the main thing is that I'm not in it for the short term.
Yeah.
I know that this is, you know, where I want to be and where I want to go.
This is what you want to dedicate your architectural career to doing, is making a difference.
Yes. There's a lot of things that can go into like having power over the materials that you're using. That's a big thing.
Yeah.
Because that also has a massive influence in the cost of the building. And then it also has a massive influence into the environmental impact of the building. Not just the systems that are in the building, but what materials that it's made out of. If it's a concrete building...
Yeah.
There's a lot of carbon emissions.
Yeah, I saw you posted something about concrete earlier.
That's from the New Cycle Instagram account.
Ah, okay.
Yes. Cool. So give them a follow.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff. They're like, hey guys, concrete is actually a large reason why there's so many carbon emissions going on, you know? Yeah. It's such a beautiful product. You just pour some stuff and it turns into stone and it's, you know, but we just use it too much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because there's no alternative. So we're trying to make the alternative.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So have you got any other projects in the pipeline with regard to your environmental architectural side of things?
Yes. So when I was working in New York City, mm-hmm. I was staying at this amazing building. It was like in Brooklyn. It was the dream, you know, I wanted to live with like some artistic people, and it was old candy factory that had been turned into studio lofts. It was so incredible. Cool. And there was this one incredible woman living there as well, a multimedia artist called Sarah Kellerin. And she had this idea for Garden Studio. I thought it was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But then I left and she kind of started this co-work space for artists. And she was like, I need help with this. And I was like, wow, this sounds great. And I think we can make it incredible. So I approached Thule and I was like, you know, we need to go there. We need to do some research. And
Thule are like really cool. They just want to get involved.
Yeah. You know.
And amazing.
Yeah. There's a lot of interesting stuff happening in the US. Like millennials. I don't want to use that word. It's a buzzword, but I'm going to use it.
I'm a millennial.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm on the fringe.
I'm an older one.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But you know, there's a big mental health issue in America. And there's a lack of access to affordable food.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lack of access to safe spaces where you can live and work, you know, especially in New York City, at least. So we wanted to make these spaces, like it was Sarah's intention to make these amazing co-work, co-live spaces.
Yes.
That are affordable, that are beautiful, that are green. And that's what we've been trying to do.
Cool.
We met up with some companies in Amsterdam that are like grow companies. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to like tackle that kind of food sovereignty side of it. How can we implement independent perennial grow systems that can really tackle food sovereignty? Because that is the future, especially since people are, I don't know, before COVID, the projections for people migrating to cities was incredible. Like, we were like, there's no toolbox to design for this. You know, architects have been like, what do we do? By 2050, there's going to be 80% or 90% of the population is going to be living in cities, and we have no precedence for this. So how do you make sure that things like quality of living and mental health don't go to the sideline, which they have been?
With all the stuff you have going on, you've got so much stuff going on. You've got your recycle build, you've got new cycle, you've got surreal. How do you, A, manage it all, and B, not like just get overwhelmed with all these things you've got to do and still find time to go snowboarding?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing what you can get done when you prioritize stuff.
Yeah.
That's for sure. You know, the New Cycle team is, they're really eloquent at speaking about this because, you know, we talk a lot about, I don't want to sound like I have a God complex or anything, but we want to be working on projects that go towards like the new earth, higher consciousness living. Well, what I have recently done up to now was just worked in a very masculine way, which is work,
right?
You know, and like must have complete control over everything. Yeah. And I'm starting to learn that in order to go towards a new kind of evolved way of working and living, we need to kind of relax and trust.
Yeah.
And it's tough for me to even talk about this because over the summer I didn't get to see you much because there were times where I was staring at the computer for 6 weeks, you know, every day.
Yeah, your only time off was to come to boot camp.
Yeah, which was, you know, my special time.
Your special time was hard boot camp exercise, which is good for the mindset, of course.
For sure, and you get to walk in nature when you, you know, go back and forth. But so in regards to that, I feel like first of all, everyone needs to relax a bit, including me. But second of all, meditation and breathing techniques has helped a lot. What got me into the meditation and the breath work in the first place was actually when I went vegan, I started noticing a lot of stuff happening with my body, and I started noticing when I was feeling anxiety and stuff.
Yeah.
But I already kind of had anxiety when, you know, I stopped drinking coffee when I was like 18 because of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Millennials. So,
yeah.
We're still in that bracket.
Exactly. Anxiety. And it's just complete game changer.
The meditation.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something this summer I actually, after speaking to you, I tried it once on a guided meditation.
Yes.
on Spotify.
Amazing.
Which I did enjoy, but I still felt like I was doing it wrong. So I kind of gave up on that. I know.
There's no way you can do it wrong.
Well, I don't know. Everyone kind of says this, oh, you're going to feel like really good. And all I felt was it's not working.
Well,
I think obviously probably had a coffee that morning.
Yeah.
And obviously, yeah, millennial True. Coffee. But it's there are various different ways to meditate. And after actually doing that and not really feeling like I was doing it right, a lot of people have said it is something that you need to really practice a little bit to get the hang of and not give up so easily.
But also, like, when you start doing that, your ego starts flipping out. And it's like, whoa, because, you know, meditation is letting go of your ego.
Okay.
And your ego's like, oh, shit, no. And they, like, latch on. So there's a period there where it's really hard. Once you start observing your mind and your thoughts, you're like, whoa. I remember, I was in Bali, I was injured, and I've read this thing, and they were like, you know, observe, just like make a note of the negative thoughts or the stories that plays on you. And in your head.
Like when you're meditating?
No, just throughout the day.
Oh, just throughout the day,
yeah,
okay.
Because once you start meditating, your ego kind of gets activated even more.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it was like every 10 minutes. Wow. I was like, what's going on?
Whoa.
My mind's telling myself stories every 10 minutes, and they were all negative. And I had no idea.
How long ago was this?
This was only like before I competed on the Freeride World Tour recently. So that was like end of 2019.
Ah, okay. Yeah, because ever since I've known you, which isn't that long, but you've been a very positive person. And it's like, I remember in the summer we went climbing.
Yes.
That was an interesting experience.
That was amazing.
For both of us.
I'm so proud of you. For that,
but yeah, I had like a full-on panic attack when I slid off the side.
You pushed yourself out of your comfort zone.
Yeah,
sure.
my feet slipped and I had a panic attack on the side of a mountain.
Because
but
it was gnarly.
It was, well, yeah, it was pretty gnarly. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, the way you spoke to me and calmed me down from that point of view was unreal and got me through it. But afterwards, you sort of mentioned, you're like, this negative self-talk, we're going to have to do something about that.
Yeah.
It's something that you've obviously worked on over the last couple of years to get to a point where you're recognizing it and doing something about it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not real.
Yeah.
And probably I said that because I experienced it myself.
Yeah.
Like once I started observing my thoughts, it was just like, what is going on here? My mind and my ego are just like completely running my life. And then once you start meditating and like working really hard to release that, it's not pretty, but it's so good. It's so,
so
good.
It's
that's like
so cool.
I'm not triggered by stuff anymore. And now I can feel it. Like I have to meditate twice a day, at least, even if it's 5 minutes. But it's only recently, and actually, to be honest, like more so with COVID, where I had to stay, because usually I'm somewhere for 3 or 4 months at the most.
Right.
And then I move on, you know, because of projects and work and whatever. So COVID made me stay in one place, and then it made me realize, okay, I have to meditate more.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, meditation is a game changer. I just advise that. I have a lot of people who agree with me. If everyone meditated at least 5 to 10 minutes a day, we would be living in a very different world.
I am actually going to take your advice on that and give it another go.
Yeah.
But you have been working on something else recently, meditation-wise, is that correct?
Yeah, are you talking about Wim Hof?
I'm talking about Wim Hof.
Yeah, I mean, we were at Bangor Park.
Okay.
Over the summer.
Where's Bangor Park?
Bangor Park is kind of towards the German border.
Right, and what is
somewhere. It? It's a park of like airbag jumps.
Right.
Yes.
Cool.
Really cool. At first I thought, I'm not sure if I'm into this.
Yeah.
But then I was like, oh, okay.
Let's give
this
it a go.
This is really, really good.
Cool.
And this is how I'm pretty sure it's like, you know, a large part of like how women in big air and stuff are progressing as well.
Cool.
Because they're able to do this, you know?
Yeah.
But obviously I'm not a big air jumper. But anyway, so I kind of tweaked my knee. I've never had a sore knee before in snowboarding, touch wood. And Teeny Gruber had shown me a few yoga, you know, Wim Hof sessions before.
Okay.
But then I was like, you know what? I don't want my knee to be sore.
Yeah.
So I did it for a week. I did Wim Hof breathing and then went into the river for as long as I could, which was quite cold at the time.
Was that glacier water?
The Gumpen.
Ah, so yeah. That is glacier water,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's really, really fucking cold.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like the cold.
No, I'm not.
I don't like the cold. Funny thing.
Everyone's like, oh, you go and do ski seasons. You love winter. I'm like, are you mad?
No.
No, the good thing about doing this is you've got the right clothes, so you're warm.
Yes. And obviously Austria's buildings are amazingly warm compared to New Zealand. Yeah. So Gumpen, water, like I would go in there for like 30 seconds. On the seventh day, I was at 7 minutes.
What?
7 minutes.
What?
Who am I? I'm not that person.
Crazy.
I'm not that person. It's crazy. And then, but the whole time I could feel my knee healing. I was like, what is this? Because usually I would just do a yoga nidra body scan before going to sleep, which also helped with my healing in Bali.
Okay.
I like cut my leg up really badly. So the yoga nidra healing and then like meditation. But then I didn't know about Wim Hof then. But there's a reason why it's trending. You feel like you're high.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
We have to do this.
Yes. It just feels really cool. Like every experience is different. So yesterday it was a different experience to how it was the day before. And
how do you feel after it then? Like, I know you said high.
Almost like digital clarity or whatever. And people compare it to a NOS hit.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
I say that like I know what it is. Yeah, I don't, Mum.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Anyway. So I was listening to a podcast, as I said to you, I was listening to Fern Cotton on Happy Place the other day, and she actually had Wim Hof on, and he is such an animated person. Yeah. He sounds like he's living the dream, loving life. Definitely made me think about wanting to try it. So I'm really glad that you came across and suggested that we do a session. So I'm up for that at some point.
Yeah. That's a good plan.
Yeah.
And I also have Gaia TV. I'm not a Netflix person. I just spend money on Gaia TV.
Gaia. Nice.
And they have a meditation channels.
So we've covered meditation. We've covered Wim Hof. Do you have any books, publications, quotes that you kind of live by that might be helpful to our listeners?
Cool. Good question. Yeah, I have one quote by Michelangelo that I use that I like to use. I mean, I can't repeat it word for word, but in general it's basically saying might as well reach for a bar that's raised super high, because if it's low it's not worth it. You know, so just dream big.
Yeah,
as long as it's positive, then just dream big. I read the recent Sean King book, which was about organizing, which I really loved.
Right. Does that help you with your work and things like that, or is that
I mean, it's basically just like do it.
Yeah
Another really good book that I've bought a lot of copies for women, is Men Explain Things to Me. And I feel like it's a really important book for every woman to read. It sounds negative, but it is not. It's a good book. I really, really advise reading that book.
Yeah. If there was one piece of advice you could give to our listeners now to follow a different path or inspire them, what would you advise them?
That's a good question, because it sounds like such a cliche. But just follow your instinct, you know, like if you're unhappy somewhere, just leave.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt like I had a dream job in New York City.
Yeah.
But
it always sounds easier said than done. It's true.
It is.
It is easier said than done.
It is. It's difficult.
It's difficult, but it's worth it.
It's so worth it. Because it doesn't matter if you're broke.
Yeah.
You're doing what you love, and that's all that matters.
Yeah.
I totally agree. So true.
So thank you for coming on and speaking with me, Maria. I much appreciate it. And I hope you will come on again. Is there anyone you want to call out to come on the show?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I do know a lot of people that live alternative lifestyles and Caesonaire style lifestyles.
Mm-hmm.
The people that I have in mind, though, are Roland Morley Brown.
Mm-hmm.
He's cool. He's Kiwi.
Yeah.
And he's been in Meyerhofen for a while now.
Yeah.
And then I have a friend coming, Jess Don Porto.
Ah, cool. Yes, I met Jess. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she's coming here for the
month. We played mini golf. Well, you guys played and I tried to score.
Oh, that's right.
Drank wine.
That was fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
I miss mini golf.
Yeah.
She's coming, and she is a very good example of someone that, you know, she has that kind of dream life city working in Zurich, but she's like, no, I can't. I need to go to Meyerhofen and work there for a month, and then I need to go to Bali and try and figure out a life there.
So, Maria, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure. You've given some really good insight into working and living abroad and all the different projects you're working on, and I hope you'll come back again.
Of course. I would love to.
And I look forward to seeing you next. I hope you enjoyed it.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure.
I loved it.
Wow, what an awesome chat. Such an inspiring young lady. Thank you again, Maria, for coming into the show. Check out our show notes for links to Maria's new website, New Cycle, and keep your eyes peeled for the all-female snowboard movie, Surreal, which will be out later this year. You can now click to subscribe on any podcast platform to get new releases of this show as they come out, so please click and subscribe. A massive thank you to our sponsors Mike's Sports Bar in Meyerhofen, Wandering Woods Coffee in the UK, and of course thank you to Mondo Wave for the music. Thanks for tuning in, guys, and I look forward to seeing you all again next time.